Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fiction File podcast, where we explore the wide world of narrative entertainment, from movies to literature and everything in between. My name is Jason Boyd. I'm the editor of Fiction File, and I'm joined remotely today by managing editor Corinne Asbell. Hey, Corinne.
Hello.
Hey, so also somewhere in cyberspace, we have associate editor Dalton McKay. How are you, Dalton?
I'm doing great.
Okay. Can we do a different voice every single time I introduce you? That'd be great. Just never
really. I'm really trying to do that. I'm trying to up the ante each time.
Good. Great. Okay. So today we'll be poring over a single work of fiction. After we introduce this work of art, we'll discuss what makes it enjoyable, what makes it a work of art in the first place, what makes it universally relatable, and finally, we'll talk about what it could have done better. So now that we have our format, what piece of narrative entertainment are we talking about today, Corinne?
So we've got The Princess Bride on our agenda today. It was released in the United States on September 25th, 1987 by 20th Century Fox. It stars Cary Elwes, Mandy Patinkin, and Robin Wright. The movie was directed by Rob Reiner, and the screenplay was based on the book by William Goldman.
When the lovely Buttercup is kidnapped by a ghastly gang intent on fomenting an international incident, they find they are pursued by the dread pirate Roberts, who just might be Wesley, her one true love. Also, after everyone is nasty Prince Ampadink, from whom Buttercup is now betrothed, but who seems to care little for her continued survival, the stage is set for sword fights, monsters, and tortures. But will Grandpa be allowed to finish telling the story with all these kissy bits?
Think you don't?
I feel like I'm gonna have to do that one over.
No, I like it's because the I didn't edit it well enough, so there's some clunky weirdness. But you sounded great.
Okay, good. All right,
so let's go over the critical opinion, because I like to just kind of get that out front, even though it doesn't really matter. I mean, what matters is your enjoyment and obviously our opinion. But to start, on IMDb, The Princess Bride currently has 8.1 stars out of 10. On Metacritic, it has 77 out of 100. And Rotten Tomatoes, critics put it at 97%. The audience is 94%.
There you go.
So now that we've kind of got a good overview of everything, let's see. What makes The Princess Bride enjoyable? So that's our first topic. Let's start with Corinne. What makes The Princess Bride enjoyable?
Am I allowed to just say the entire movie? Do I have to really pick apart?
Sure. Since you're going first, you get to just say the entire movie, and then we'll go ahead.
That makes my part
you're
easier.
You're welcome. Well, I mean, if you think about it, it's got every single genre that you can think of included in it. I mean, it tells a memorable love story. It's infinitely quotable. Even people who haven't seen the movie, and side note, what's wrong with you people? But even people who haven't seen the movie are able to quote it. I mean, just about every character is memorable, and you walk after seeing it, and you can just, I can't say memorable again. I can't think of another word. You just remember it so well. Right. And it's just one of those movies that you can watch over and over, even if you're the weird one repeating the dialogue along with the characters and your friends are looking at you strangely.
Okay. Well, that's usually me. So,
yeah.
Not really, actually. I'm bad at dialogue.
But looking at me strangely?
I agree with Corinne, like 100%.
Right.
Basically, every point that I had is she covered. The characters, the narrative, the actors, every element of this film comes together cohesively. I do think the lighting, the lighting too, but the writing, yeah, the writing has a lot to do with its success. As she mentioned, it is so quotable, everything. Rodents of unusual size? I don't think they exist.
Yeah, no, it's to me, I think that all that is definitely true. But really, to me, it's that it doesn't take itself seriously at all. Mm-hmm. It's so self-effacing, and and I mean, you look at like the runtime. So I just double checked; it's an hour and 38 minutes. And it feels snappy. It feels really fast. It goes, it just breezes by, and you almost just want to watch it again, like right away.
Right after, yeah.
And so it's just this breezy. It takes itself breezy. Everything's just breezy about it. And plus, I mean, to me, the highlight is Billy Crystal. And that's when you're like 100% certain it's a comedy. Because you're like, this is kind of a, you know, it's lighthearted and stuff. But like, God, that's just the funniest stuff in the world. Miracle Max.
Yeah. Have fun storming the castle.
It's just the funniest thing. I can't remember who plays his wife. Let's see.
I don't remember.
Yeah, his wife Valerie is played by Carol Kane. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's great too. So like, just, and they have great chemistry, and I mean, that's just,
yeah, to me, they feed off each other. Like, it's like a real married couple.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say that as much as I love Billy Crystal and as great of a comedian he is, I think without Carol Kane there, it wouldn't have been the same.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Everybody needs someone to play off of, you know, and that's no one's funny on their own except Robin Williams. but yeah, let's move on to our next topic then. Let's explore what makes The Princess Bride a work of art. So I'll kick this off, since I love talking.
All right.
To me, it's a work of art because it's a fairy tale true to the spirit of fairy tales. But yet it's not derivative. So what I mean by that is that in literature or in any kind of, you know, higher literature, you can play true to a theme. You can play true to a genre. You can play into tropes. Mm-hmm. But what makes it artistic is when you venture apart from it. Because then you're kind of commenting on the genre itself. It becomes almost a meta commentary. And so I've seen this referred to as a bent fairy tale, and I think bent is a really great description of it. It's of this era too of pastiche, which is modern art, where you basically throw artistic elements together, honoring the different elements, but it's not satire. It's actually just kind of like, hey, that goes together, like, you know, peanut butter and chocolate. And it's remixed. You get intertextuality, which I love to talk about. You get just new things that happen, like just Billy Crystal playing a magic guy. Like, it's just, you know. But it ventures down this fairy tale trope, but yet has so much fun with it to the point that it's becoming an artistic commentary. It's very meta to me. I feel like it's the kind of thing you can explore and reference whenever you're talking about taking fantasy and making it something that's not derivative. You can always just point to Princess Bride to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I have seen a lot of it talked about in various discussion boards and things like talking about what makes a good fantasy movie, but also what makes a good movie that kind of makes fun of itself, but is still trying to take things seriously. So yeah, that's a really great point.
Thanks. Yeah. So let's see, Kareem, what do you think makes The Princess Bride a work of art?
I'm going to say the dialogue. I know we touched on it earlier. All of us did, talking about how quotable it is, but you just look at it like the pre-fight banter between Wesley, or the Man in Black, as he's still known at that time, between Inigo. Yeah. I mean, just the respect that they have, but the fun that they're having, talking about all the different fencing styles and, you know, but, oh, they start laughing because, oh, I'm not left-handed, actually. And that whole time. I personally like the little rhyming that goes on between Inigo and Fezzik a lot. Starting with, you know, the whole, does anybody want a peanut? And then it comes back around later on in the movie when Fezzik and Inigo meet up and they bring the rhyming back again. Just shows their little friendship thing. Yeah. Honestly, my favorite part, and it's probably not the character I'm supposed to like the most, is Vizzini. He's mm-hmm. just got this delightful contemptuousness about him, right. His arrogance. And as he goes into that battle of wits with the Man in Black, he never thinks of the simplest thing about the iocane powder being in both drinks. just the back and forth, the way his brain works. I know that's got as much to do with the dialogue as it does with Wallace Shawn, the actor who played Vizzini, but I just love him. But then, and
that's
also
an iconic scene. I love that scene, just because it takes a classic scene of that poisoning a drink and comments on it again, just like it's commenting on all types of genres within this fantasy genre.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, and it just, the way they just go back and forth, I mean, it's dizzying. But and then I just, the conversations between the grandfather and the grandson too, like it takes you out of the fantasy world just a little bit to remind you that this is, you know, a grandfather trying to make his sick grandson feel better. And then you just see the grandson and, you know, he's like, is this a kissing book? But then as the story goes on, the more he cares, like the part where he's like, hey, wait, Wesley's not dead. It's just you get into it just as much as the grandson does. And I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the grandson is kind of playing the part of the audience while you're watching the film. Funny story about the fencing and whatnot between those two, Cariolis and I can't think of who plays
Mandy Patinkin.
Mandy Patinkin, that's right. So both of them studied under Bob Anderson, who is the same person who choreographed the first three Star Wars movies.
Right.
Master Swordsman. And those two, both Mandy Patinkin and Cariolis were trained by him. And before they started filming, Cary had no training whatsoever. And the first day of filming, Anderson asked them both, have you had any sort of experience? And both of them said no, but Cary soon found out that Mandy had actually been going to an Olympic fencers gym for like 3 months. And so he was like, okay, we'll take this nice and slow. And then he was just like, whoop, 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 whoop. And Cary thought, yeah, that is so an ego. It's so an ego to say, I have no skill, and then just pop out with it.
Right.
Yeah.
So true.
But I agree that I agree with both of you. I kind of when I wrote my little blurb on this, I combined both of your points into mine. Princess Bride combines so many elements from literature and fiction, and it does so seamlessly. And we begin the film in a sick boy's bedroom and end with the purest kiss of all time. We're literally transported to another world through the narrative, and it's a narrative within a narrative, and that's hard to put, that's hard to execute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's extremely hard to execute. And I'll talk about that a little more later, but yeah, it is to what it is, it's very well done. I mean, it's, You see that kind of thing in movies a lot now, where they try to be non-linear, and you know, it just doesn't work. It's too much. But this is really well done for what it is.
Yeah, and then sometimes they go the opposite way and they become too meta. Like meta comedy has become so prevalent, and it makes me roll my eyes so hard.
Right.
Like to the point where characters are literally looking out at the audience and like giving a sly wink to things like, hey, remember this thing? Eh? And it's like,
right.
Yes, we know.
Yeah. I mean, that's Mel Brooks, where he likes to bring in the boom mic into the shot every now and then, just to remind you that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Mel Brooks style of it. Yeah. But,
he does it so well.
Yeah, he does. But let's see. Okay, so now that we've covered that, let's try to move on. And great points, everybody. But let's move on to our next topic. What makes The Princess Bride universally relatable? Let's go ahead and start with Dalton.
So I think, without a doubt, it's got to be the characters from The Princess Bride. The characters from this movie are kind of like the Ninja Turtle litmus test. Have you guys ever taken that? So right, yes. Basically, the theory is that we tend to gravitate toward characters that are most like ourselves. So right. So you guys have seen the Ninja Turtles, right? Sure. Okay. So when you think of the Ninja Turtles, who's your favorite character, Corrine?
Michelangelo.
And what about you, Jason?
Michelangelo for me too.
Oh yeah. Well, that fits both of your personalities pretty well.
Right.
Yes. My favorite was always Leonardo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fits yours as well.
Yeah, that really does.
So, like, there's an archetype in this movie for everyone. There's the dashing hero, mm-hmm. the revenge seeker, perfectionist, the hopeless mm-hmm. romantic, the brat, the sociopath, the gentle giant, literal and figurative. The intelligent but devious mastermind. Besides this, it makes use of a simple but effective structure that allows it to be viewed by a wide range of people. Like, it doesn't use flash forwards or flashbacks. It doesn't try to get too deep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things where it totally takes the fairy tale setting on and using those archetypes. I mean, a fairy tale is not a fairy tale without archetypes. Mm-hmm. You can't have a modern, fully fleshed out, flawed character, kind of, you know, a feet of clay type of person in a fairy tale. It just doesn't work. But like, because of that, they just have this unbelievable relatability to them. And my take is honestly along those lines, but it's just on a theme, on a thematic level. You know, it deals with revenge, redemption, reuniting. These are things that it's almost too easy. It's almost like the movie is being thrown a softball that it can easily knock out of the park. It's like, let's just put separated lovers, adventure, revenge, you killed my father, prepare to die. I mean, just all that kind of like, let's just put everything together. And who's not going to find something relatable about that?
Yeah, check all the boxes. It will apply to everyone.
Right. I mean, credit to William Goldman, just because, I mean, to come up with an idea that makes it easy for yourself, you still came up with the idea. Mm-hmm. So you should get credit for making it easy for yourself, you know? And of course he executed perfectly. So, yeah, that's my take, but, let's see, Corrine, what do you think? What do you think makes it universally relatable?
I mean, to me at its core, what makes it most relatable is, well, in my opinion, I don't really think the movie is a romance. Sure, you know, Wesley and Buttercup are two lead characters and the story revolves around them. But to me, it's really about Inigo, Fezzik, and Wesley, and they're all coming together to accomplish their goals that they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all completely different. Their backgrounds don't have anything in common, really, the exception of Fezzik and Inigo working for Fizzini, but that's really not that much in common. But they're able to form a bond, and then they devise a plan to rescue Buttercup, let Inigo face the Six-Fingered Man and get his justice, and mostly just to let Fezzik help his friends out and be kind of really awesome and really adorable. But, I mean, if you think of that's his goal, is to just, these are my friends, let's help them.
Yeah.
I just feel it's not about the romance.
It's funny that, you know, you talk about the Ninja Turtles litmus test, but then you have the Harry Potter, what house do you belong to? And you can kind of separate everybody into that as well. Fezzik is a total Hufflepuff. Mm-hmm. He's a total Hufflepuff. He fits that mold so great, and it's so cool to have him as the giant, just like you have the giant in Harry Potter being, you know, gentle mm-hmm. with the animals and everything. But yeah, that's a great point. So would you call this a bromance
I kind of would.
Okay. More of a bromance than a romance. Well, let's just say there's multiple levels of romance in this, you know?
Yeah. there's platonic love. There's romantic right. love. Yeah. There's self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So good.
So it's a movie about love, whether it's romance or not. I like that.
But the That's real true. Treasure is friendship.
Mm, there you go. Now kiss. Okay. Okay. All right. So I think we covered that. Let's move on to the next topic. It's going to be, what could the Princess Bride have done better? Corrine, let's start with you.
Now, my opinion on this is probably one that is going to be pretty unpopular with a lot of people, but
mm-hmm.
Princess Buttercup was really useless.
Mm-hmm.
She just kind
She's a damsel.
Yeah, she was a literal damsel, and she had nothing to her other than she was a damsel. She just mm-hmm. kind of exists in that world. She's always having to be rescued, and the only time she really tries to stand up for herself is when she pushes Wesley down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and she wasn't really standing up for herself. She was standing up for Wesley, who she thought the Dread Pirate Roberts was making fun of.
Right.
But she's just kind of there, like a lump of clay, you know, like the sculptor set the clay aside and forgot about it, but had everything else ready and like maybe no one will notice. I don't know. I think if she could have had a more central role, maybe more active, maybe rescued Wesley, rescued herself, managed to figure out that the popping noises in the fire swamp meant that there was going to be a fire spout and not keep getting caught on fire. I mean, if you think about it, every time the pop, 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 Wesley had to move her. She couldn't even step aside herself. He literally picked her up and moved her. I mean, and then, you know, we've been talking about all the great lines and everything in this movie, and she doesn't get any of the good lines. And I think that's just kind of a tragedy. She could have been a much better character, but she's just kind of a lump.
Yeah, and it's sad that it feels like, and you know, this is not a defense of misogyny in film, but it feels like it's set up that there's no way for her to be anything more,
mm-hmm.
because she's, you know, there's not like a escape that she tries to do herself that goes wrong or something where it was like, you know, she's pretty much screwed. So yeah. It's like, well, what is she gonna do? But it's like, well, writing it that way just makes it easy for you to now have a passive character that's female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she literally just checks a box. Female character, check.
Well, she's the ring, right? Right. She's the Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. She is the MacGuffin.
Yes, yes.
If the MacGuffin has a personality, it can't be easily transported.
Yeah.
Again, not defending that position, but just saying that, you know, she's the ring from Lord of the Rings.
You got a great point. Yeah, she's the prize, so to speak, which itself could be seen as a little, you know, that's kind of gross. But
oh, yeah.
At the same time, she's supposed to be pure and unblemished. So it's almost like, well, the more we show her on screen, the more people might see blemishes, you know? It's up to the story, yeah.
Yeah, those are great points. And from a literary standpoint, and the fact that she is just a plot device, you can't really give her a personality. But mm-hmm. I just wished, you know, because I'm all about the strong female role.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And just when two females in this movie, really, that have lines, yeah. Valerie and Buttercup, and Valerie's a better character. You know?
And really, yeah. Buttercup is the mirror through which we view the two spectrums of masculinity that we find in this movie.
Mm.
So you have Wesley, who represents like a sort of the right masculinity. He's gentle yet strong. He's a lover and a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Humperdinck on the other end, who's self-obsessed and wants to possess her. And he, you know, he represents toxic masculinity. So look, and seeing her reactions to both of them and her rejecting Humperdinck and accepting Wesley is probably the most important aspect of her character.
That's a good point. I didn't see it that way.
Good point. So let's see, Dalton, what do you think it could have done better? The Princess Bride, what could The Princess Bride have done better?
So my fiance and I were actually talking about this while I was doing prep for the show, and I was struggling. Like, I love this movie. I've seen it so many times. I watch it probably once every like couple months. Just to get it back into my system. And I've seen it so many times, I didn't really want to break it down and dissect it. And it's not that it can't hold up under scrutiny, it's just that I don't want it to be scrutinized. It's so delightful that to put it on a cold metal operating table and cut it open seems like a sacrilege to me. But then I started kind of thinking about it, and I was wondering if the film relies too much on nostalgia to make it to make it palatable.
It could be.
I'm not sure about that, but
yeah, I mean, if you wanted to really, you know, pick something, you could say, you know, it's almost like it's got a handicap that like it has an advantage. Where it's playing off of things that we're already fond of.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's what I was getting at, is that it doesn't try to innovate. It tries to strengthen biases and ideas that we already had.
Yeah, the only innovation it has is in that modern art way of cynicism. Cynicism toward the thing that it's doing. So it has that like cynicism toward fantasy. Like, it doesn't take fantasy seriously, even though it's stuck in a fantasy world. So it allows itself to comment on the genre of fantasy. So in that commentary, you have some innovation because it's breaking from a mold, but it doesn't do anything once it breaks from that mold. Possible. I mean, you know, that's an argument you could make.
Yeah.
Of course, I think it's, you know, it's a wonderful movie, but if you're, I see where you're going with that.
Thank you for helping me articulate that. I was having a lot of trouble.
No, you got it, bud. No, that was good. I mean, and like you said, it is hard to dissect this thing just because it's like a big, warm, glowy teddy bear. You know, it's just like all good stuff. And you're like, I don't want to like, it's not even supposed to be broken down. Like, it, the fact that it doesn't take itself seriously makes you feel silly for taking it seriously.
Exactly.
So you're like, why am I taking this seriously? It's supposed to be fun, you know?
It's kind of like the not to date us too much in this episode, but the new Animal Crossing game. There was an article online recently that was talking about how players actually have developed insecurities when visiting other people's islands, because they view their progress going through the game as inferior to other players' progress.
Yes, yeah, comparative. Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes, exactly.
Dude. So, for me, I want to say what I think The Princess Bride could have done better. And this is the kind of thing that I feel like I'm saying it, you know, I've said it twice now. This is the second time we've done this. But I feel like I'm going to be saying this a lot, which is, where are the people of color? Again, I mean, there's like no, you have, you know, Billy Crystal, Carol Kane, you have like some Jewish representation there. And then you have a bunch of blonde people and you have just like, you know, good looking white people. But there's not, and the thing is that there's room for ethnicity because it is a fairy tale, and it's not even a fairy tale set in old time England per se. It's just kind of like, it feels like it could have any color of people.
Yeah, it's hard to make that argument because Mel Brooks also did, you know, Robin Hood Men in Tights, which we have plenty of diversity there.
Right. Yeah. Right. And
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles. Right. So it's like, well, I mean, and you know, this, yeah, it has. But then also on Twitter, like I was, you know, just doing research about what other, have people brought this up, the people of color problem? And they have, but they've been shot down heavily by, you know, sadly, white people, like on Twitter, where it's just like, how dare you talk about this? Because, of course, Princess Bride has come up along with many other movies about being remade. And so one individual, you know, I'll put the name in the show notes, but can't remember it at the moment. But they mentioned, hey, if we're going to remake it, let's think about putting some people of color, some diversity in this movie, because it's got room for it. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
And they were just, bleh, you know, they just shot her down, tore her apart. What? They're just vicious. Yeah, I could not find any real support. Other than just a few, like, you know, prayer claps and like heart signs, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So let's think about this. If we were going to recast the Princess Bride, who do you think we would put in those places?
Oh, so like Kerry Washington would make a great Buttercup.
I mean, Kerry Washington's too great of a actress to just waste on a lump of clay. I'm sorry.
That's the thing. We would improve Buttercup too, because we gotta, you know, bring it into the 21st century, you know, the 22nd, whatever the century we're in. Sorry, we have to bring it into the 2000s.
Okay, I'll allow that.
Yeah.
I think I would like to see. I just think a really good, because I'm going off like accents, like Cary Elwes, that delicious accent, and you know, he was such a good looking guy. I would think Henry Golding, which you guys probably might not know who that is off the top of your head. He was the lead actor in Crazy Rich Asians. He played Nick Young. Yeah, he just had a ton of charisma, and I could just see him in that role.
Right. Yeah, Oscar Isaac for Inigo.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yes.
Who do we know that's a giant?
That's the problem.
That's
something that we haven't really mentioned too much. Yeah, Adam Driver, sure, because he's got that big torso. but we haven't mentioned that too much. Is that, I mean, how do you, Andre the Giant as Fezzik is just one of these perfect castings, and he's got such charisma, and he's so gentle. He's the definition of like a gentle giant in this. When they're jumping down from the tower and he's catching them, like it's like he's catching a baby bird, you know. He's just such a gentle, like everything about him is perfect. It'd be hard to recreate that. I would almost think that you would have to take that character and just make it a wild card and do something completely different with it.
Yeah,
because I think you need an iconic personality.
Yeah, I do have to agree about that. And also just, and I hate to be that person, looking at his size, I can't think of anybody. Like the scene, like when Wesley, like right after he gets brought back to life, he's holding his, no, that's Inigo, I'm sorry. Inigo's drunk in the forest, in the thieves' forest. And, you know, Fezzik comes up to him and Inigo like holds his tiny little hand up to Fezzik's big old hand, and you can just see like this man's hand is three times the size
right
of Inigo's hand. We would, if you didn't have someone that large that would look like they should be a terrifying person, it kind of ruins it.
I agree. Yeah, that would be the hardest one, but no, that's fun actually, you know. And guys, leave a comment in the show notes on fictionfile.com, or you know, in the comments on iTunes, feel free.
Or at Dalton.
Send us Dalton. Yeah. But just, just let us know. Let us know who you would cast in a remake of Princess Bride that would Hopefully make it more diverse, but, you know, no pressure on that. But just when it feels natural.
Yeah.
But okay, let's...
go ahead. Sorry, it just came to me. Our good friend Dwayne The Rock Johnson is Fezzik.
That's actually, I mean, that's pretty good. Yeah, because he's got the personality that you have to have someone who's larger than life, literally and, yes, you know, figuratively.
Yeah. I like that idea, but I feel like he's too obvious, too.
I don't, you know? He is in every movie.
That's he's supposed to be obvious. He's a giant. He's got to stand out. But I was just sitting there thinking, like, what wrestlers do we know that are, like, really huge?
Yeah, and going back to the wrestlers, not a bad idea. Yeah. I think it might be a good idea to go to that well.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking Batista, but then I'm like, that doesn't really help too much with diversity.
Correct.
So, yeah, okay, that's it. The Rock, it has to be.
Yeah. So let's see. Let's bring it all together. Let's talk about our final thoughts. So last chance to just bring up anything. Final thoughts about The Princess Bride. I would like to start because I have a bone to pick. Mm-hmm. And I think this will maybe upset a few people, especially on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But I think the grandfather-grandson meta-narrative kind of ruins the film's timelessness. Because first of all, it puts it in a time.
Oh yeah.
It keeps it from being a fairy tale of its own that can just stand independent. The book itself that, like, William Goldman wrote was just the fairy tale. It had no father, grandfather, or grandson, or anything like that. I feel like the Hollywood machine was a bit had their hands in this, where they could not foresee an audience accepting such a fairy tale because it was going to be a different bent fairy tale. So they thought, well, let's just cook it up and make it kind of like the grandfather's retelling is maybe what makes this a little kooky, you know? And so they just thought that would be a good device. To me, that's what I feel, but that's just a hunch. I haven't done research on that. But to me, it just takes us out of it to me. Every time we go back to Fred Savage's face, I'm just like, why are we doing this? Why are we back in the sick kid's room? Like, I want to just know what the story is.
Well, but,
go ahead, Craig.
Who has done research.
Oh, no.
Here we go.
Can we
get a sound, like a soundbite that plays every time someone just well actuallys?
Yes.
But Goldman, you know, wrote the screenplay. Goldman was the one who wrote this in there. He actually went to a whole bunch of work on this because, like, he's got this character, doesn't even have a name, but it's supposed to be him. He turned himself into the grandfather. And you look at him, he just took enough of his details from his life to make this him, to muddy the line between reality and fiction. But he also then went and just gave this whole elaborate backstory. Like, the grandfather has a bad relationship with his psychiatrist wife, who's named Helen. His son is overweight and he just doesn't connect with him. And it's just, he poured so much into this story that it's not a Hollywood thing. It's what Goldman thought would be the best way to make it. Makes sense.
Maybe, but I know how that Hollywood, you know, you put in a script and then you're going to get notes. And so what you see as the final product is, I'd like to see his rough draft that he took to the first meeting, you know, and just see if there was a lot of grandfather stuff. But even so, you know, I just disagree with it. Even if it was the great William Goldman's, you know, gut instinct that this would be the way to make it work. I just feel like it's the one thing where I could definitely lose it and still think just as fondly of the movie. But it's, for what it is, it's well done. Like I said earlier, it's, you know, that kind of meta narrative is always tricky. People have tried to do it and imitate it so many times, and it's just awful. But this does it well, mainly because of the tone. The tone's great. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take itself seriously. Again, it matches the tone of the fairy tale, but yet grounds us a little bit more. So I mean, it's got its good qualities. I just think that that's something that, you know, I don't know. Just I'm wondering what everybody else thinks. So guys, again, go ahead and at me at the Fiction File on Twitter. So let's see, Cree, what do you think? Final thoughts.
I actually have something else I want to add to your thought.
Yeah. Oh, go for it.
Because you were talking about you'd love to see the rough draft, the first draft. Yeah. And I was going to say that all this backstory and all these things that he came up with were actually included in the draft, but it got cut because there wasn't enough room for it all in the movie.
Gotcha.
So that's the last thing I have to say about that.
Which there we go, actually.
Why they had to cut all the kissing scenes.
Yeah. There we go. All right. Well, well played.
I love this movie. And I will fight you over it.
Obviously.
You can at me anywhere you can find me if you want to tell me why I shouldn't love this movie, and I will tell you why you're wrong. But this is a classic. And every time, like, they show it at Midnight Madness somewhere or on, you know, any of the big screens, I'm there going to watch it, no matter how many times I've seen it. It's flawed. It's, of course it is. There's nothing that's not flawed that's made, produced today or in the past. But the movie is just so amazing to me that I can ignore all of its flaws and just enjoy it for what it is. A fairy tale that doesn't take itself seriously, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. All right, well put, well put. And Dalton, what would you say? What's your final thoughts about The Princess Bride, Dalton?
Oh, man. I highly enjoy this movie for numerous and varied reasons. It's so chill. You can watch it any day of the week at any time, and it's going to be just as good. I mean, it's like pizza. Because even bad pizza is still pretty good.
Right. Cold, warm, hot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In May and August, who cares?
Right.
But, and I mean, it's something that me and my fiance share quite a bit in, like, the reveling of this movie. I mean, our, I think it's our bridal shower or something, or whatever that's called. I'm not in it, but she wants to theme it after the theme of it is going to be As You Wish.
The bride is going to be having a Princess Bride theme. That's cute.
Correct. Like that. Yeah, so it's gonna be nice. Looking forward to it, and like there's just so many good feelings that I have wrapped up in this movie that it's, as I said before, it's really hard to pick it apart.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, everybody. Well, before we move on, how could everybody listening, because I'm sure they want to hear more from you, where can they find you on the interwebs? Kareen?
You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Nonlinear Girl, and on Twitter at Nonlinear Girl with a zero.
Fantastic. Cool. And Dalton, where can people stalk you? Or not?
Oh, man. Don't. Anyway.
Please don't stalk Dalton.
Too soon. But
who can lovingly follow Dalton?
There we go. You can follow me on Instagram or Facebook at sword_gaijin or the sword gaijin. You'll have to look for it. You'll see it.
Excellent. And of course, you can find Fiction File at Fiction File Mag on MAG as in magazine on Twitter or Instagram, or Fiction File on Facebook is really where it's hopping. So check out that. Kareen, let's move on to where can I find The Princess Bride streaming?
Well, unfortunately, I checked all of the major streaming service subscription services, and none of them have The Princess Bride in their catalog. But it is available to rent digitally on Amazon, or you can purchase it digitally from your favorite video service like Apple TV, Google Play, and Vudu. Or you could just like go on Amazon, buy the Blu-ray, and have it to watch it whenever you want.
Yeah, there you go. you could click through one of our affiliate links on fictionfile.com and get us some sweet, sweet taste of that.
Oh, give me that, that money.
That 0.5% commission. yeah, but you know, every little bit helps. But all right, well, thank you, Kareen, and thank you, Dalton. Mm-hmm. Wonderful as always. So that's it, everybody, for this installment of the Fiction File podcast. I want to invite you to fictionfile.com for more scintillating analysis like you heard today. And don't forget to rate us if you liked today's episode, and subscribe to make sure you don't miss the next episode. Until then, I want to thank you for spending a little story time with us today. And for Dalton McKay and Kareen Asbell, this is Jason Boyd and the Fiction File family wishing you a happily ever after.
As you wish.